From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1953 when U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed Executive Order 10450, which barred homosexuals from working in the federal government. It was part of what became known as the Lavender Scare, which paralleled the anti-communist campaign spearheaded by McCarthy, often referred to as the Red Scare. Gay men and lesbians were said to be security risks and probably communist sympathizers, which led to the call to remove them from state employment. Historians say that the restrictions led to hundreds of homosexuals being exposed as gay and fired from the State Department. The executive order was also the cause for the firing of approximately 5,000 gay people from federal employment, and it led to continued harassment, persecution, physical abuse, and a number of suicides. The Lavender Scare is the subject of a documentary film that is coming to the Image Out Film Festival in Rochester, which kicks off on Thursday. In this hour, we've got a chance to talk to a couple of the directors behind some of the films, including the Lavender Scare, and talk to the people behind the Image Out Festival, which now is going on, well, almost 25 years. In fact, the founder of the Image Out Film Festival, Larry Champeau, is here. Larry, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Also here is Paul Allen, chair of the board of directors for the Image Out Film Festival. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having us back.
And Michael Gamilla, programming director for the Image Out Film Festival. Michael, welcome to you.
Good afternoon.
And on the line with us is Josh Howard, producer and director of The Lavender Scare. Congratulations on the film, and thank you for taking the time, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. I just want to ask Larry real briefly here. Take us back just a little bit. Early, mid-90s. It wasn't called Image Out at the time, but what's the brief history lesson for our listeners who are going to go to Image Out but not realize how long you've been doing this?
Well, the origins of Image Out, which originally were called the Rochester Lesbian and Gay Film and Video Festival, are deeply entrenched in the environment of the 1980s and the 1990s. The 80s were sort of an explosion of cultural activities for the gay and lesbian community and was vastly supported by New York State Council on the Arts, National Endowment for the Arts, and within our own community. It was a wonderful time period that was sharply followed by the censorship crisis at the National Endowment for the Arts, headed by people like Jesse Helms and Alphonse D'Amato, who sought to defund lesbian and gay artists who had received individual artists' grants from the NEA. It led to a Supreme Court ruling that, in the end, I think did not rule on their behalf. But artists in our country faced a crisis at that point. And indeed, the entire artist community faced a crisis at that point. Image Out was a mechanism for the gay community to take its own culture back, to ensure that if we faced defunding, opposition, hatred, discrimination, we had a means and a mechanism in place to promote our own culture, take control of it, and do it, tell our stories the way we wanted to tell our own stories. So that was sort of the background and impetus. I had been director at Pyramid Art Center, which was the predecessor for Rochester Contemporary Arts, and had done a fair amount of programming in terms of avant-garde art, which included a lot of lesbian and gay artists. So that was my background going into it, and I'd done work with New York State Council on the Arts, which was very supportive of our efforts. So that was sort of the national and statewide background. Locally, we had just come out of a decade of AIDS activism and intense volunteerism. So we were able to mobilize that volunteer spirit in a way that celebrated our culture after many years of great grief and tragedy.
In a moment, we're going to have a chance to talk to Josh Howard about the Lavender Scare. But I would like Paul and Michael just kind of give us the quick overview. How many films? It's October 5th through the 15th, so it kicks off on Thursday. And you can see films and events at the Little Theater and the Dryden Theater. But Michael, what's the landscape coming up here for Image Out?
Well, we have about 6 to 7 films from all over the world, narrative features, documentary features, and short films, and spread out in 39 programs from October 5th to the 15th. And we're excited to host a world premiere, a few East Coast premieres, and a lot of New York State premieres. So it just proves that filmmakers and the festival circuit have a lot of respect for Image Out here in Rochester, and which we're so proud because it's totally run by volunteers and loyal volunteers who've been doing it for years.
And find the schedule where? Information where?
We have booklets all over the city, but they can also go online at imageout.org, and they can watch trailers there and watch and read descriptions of the films that we have, and most especially buy tickets.
You can buy tickets. Imageout.org, and one of the films is The Lavender Scare, and Josh Howard is the producer and director. And Josh, I mentioned off the top here, this was an education for me, and I suspect a lot of viewers who maybe in recent years you saw, you know, the story of touring and what happens when people doing heroic things are nonetheless persecuted simply for being gay. And but I think a lot of Americans see a film like that and they say, well, that was British society, you know, a generation or two ago. Well, here we are, we're in the 1950s, and, you know, feel free to correct any of my intro or kind of set the scene for us in the 1950s that takes us through the beginning of The Lavender Scare.
Oh, well, yeah, this was an education for me as well. I thought I knew a good deal about the McCarthy era and something about LGBT history. But I came across this book called The Lavender Scare, and the story was just fascinating to me. There was a systematic purge of gay men and lesbians that was directed by the president, and it went on for decades. The one thing I might say is you used the figure 5,000 people were fired. It's really impossible to know exactly how many people were fired because a lot of the records kept by the government don't accurately reflect that. But beyond the numbers of people fired, this went far beyond that. You have to consider the number of people who were denied employment when background checks determined they were gay. The numbers of people who never applied for jobs because they knew that they would be exposed. The Eisenhower executive order applied to private businesses as well that did business with the government. So it really, the government really set off this wave of homophobia that affected, you know, tens and tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people around the country.
We've got a couple of clips, and I'd like to listen to the first one. This is President Eisenhower talking about gay employees. I mean, and again, and I'm sure Josh Howard will tell us a little bit more about this in a moment, but the film reminds us this wasn't, you know, sort of covert and, you know, discrimination with a wink and a nod. This was really overt, and there were headlines across the country. Let's listen to this clip of Eisenhower talking about gay employees.
Under the standards established by the new employee security program, more than 2,200 employees have been separated from the federal government. Our national security demands that the investigation of new employees and the evaluation of derogatory information respecting present employees be expedited and concluded at the earliest possible date.
And met with applause with it. Josh, tell us more about that, Josh.
Well, you make a good point. Initially, this was a huge issue. During the 1952 presidential campaign, Eisenhower and Richard Nixon, his running mate, made a big issue out of getting rid of gays and lesbians who were working for the government. As the years progressed, the issue kind of faded from the headlines, but this then became kind of an institutional process in the government. And this is one of the reasons that the story is really not well known. Over the years, the gay people who were being fired didn't want to tell, you know, friends and family why they were leaving the government, because they were in the closet. They did have to find other employment. So they kept quiet. And after that initial burst of publicity, you heard Eisenhower, you know, bragging about the number of people fired. As over the decades, more and more people were getting fired, the government didn't want to talk about this anymore, because then people would say, well, why were you hiring them in the first place? So it became kind of this conspiracy of silence that went on for decades on both sides. It wasn't until 1995 that President Clinton signed an executive order that reversed the Eisenhower executive order and eventually put a stop to this.
1995, and before my conversation with Josh Howard is over, we'll talk about not to give away too much, but the very last image of your film reminds us what's going on now, Josh. And I want to get there, too, because sometimes we look at history and we sort of say, well, it's a good thing, you know, we're over that. But just amazing stuff. But there was also a person who helped, didn't do it alone, but did a lot of the work to kind of push back and say he wasn't going to take that, and that was Frank Kameny. And here's another name that many Americans don't know but should. Tell us about Frank Kameny.
Well, Frank Kameny was an astronomer, had a PhD from Harvard. This was in the late 1950s, the early days of the space race. And two investigators showed up in his office one day and said, "We have information. You're a homosexual." And he was fired. He was out of work. And probably by the time he was fired, thousands and thousands of other people had been fired. But unlike all of them who went quietly, Frank decided to fight back. And he appealed his dismissal, and he filed court cases. He wrote his own brief for the Supreme Court, and he lost every step of the way. But he was a man who was not going to take no for an answer. He didn't believe that being gay was a reason that he should be denied employment. And his resistance to this is really, really sowed the seeds for the early days of the gay rights movement.
Yeah, he becomes this figure that, you know, your viewers may be, again, if they don't know Frank's story, as I didn't, surprised to see President Obama and Michelle Obama congratulating him and handing him a civilian award and thanking him for what he did. What a change in his life to get there. But it didn't mean that, you know, it was sort of easy, and that it wasn't with controversy in Washington and all of the things that were happening, not just, again, in the 50s and 60s, but throughout the decade. So how do you think his legacy looks now? What does his legacy look like to you now, Josh?
Well, I think he's just a towering, you know, figure in the gay rights movement. You know, he's the Rosa Parks or Susan B. Anthony. He organized the first public protests for gay rights in Washington in front of the White House years before the Stonewall Uprising, which is commonly thought of as the beginning of the gay rights movement. And I think he's one of our forgotten heroes. And it's, you know, it's the reason I'm so grateful to Image Out for showing this film and telling this story, because I think we do have to, you know, recognize where we've come from and salute the people who really have made lives, you know, made life better for generations of gay and lesbian people who followed.
We've got a clip from the film The Lavender Scare of Frank Kameny. You're going to hear Frank, and I think in this clip, if I have it correct, you're also going to hear an actor's voice reading from one of the letters that Frank had written over the years. So let's listen to this clip, Frank Kameny.
To the best of my knowledge and belief, I was the first person to fight back out of all of those large, huge number of people that were fired in the 50s.
Dear Mother, you might remember that many, many years ago, I made a statement to you and to Father which you disparaged as youthful bluster. I said, if the world and I differ on a matter, I will give the matter very careful second thought. If the world and I still differ, then I am right and the world is wrong. If one side has to change, it will be the world which will change, because I won't.
That stubbornness served him well. In fact, I think in a later clip he said, you know, over those decades, Frank watched the world change when he didn't, Josh.
Absolutely. That really captured his personality. At one point he said, I was not going to adjust myself to society. I adjusted society to me.
Yeah.
And as he goes on to say, and society is much better off for the adjustments that I administered. But that was his personality. He was a brilliant scientist, but he also had supreme confidence in his beliefs and his thoughts, and he was a fighter. I was so honored to. I spent 3 days with him, shooting the interview and talking to him about this history. And I have to say, by the end of the 3 days, I had a little bit of sympathy for the federal government because Frank doesn't take direction very, very happily. So I got a, I got a sense of his determined personality, and thank God for it because he really, as I said before, he got the ball rolling and changed history.
Listeners, when we say the name Frank Kameny, Kameny is spelled K-A-M-E-N-Y. So you get a chance to see his story and hear him in his own words in the film The Lavender Scare, which is coming to the Image Out Film Festival, which kicks off on Thursday and runs through October 15th. But Frank Kameny, if you want to just look him up online, K-A-M-E-N-Y, because if you're like me and you didn't know that story, this is such an important name and person. And even Paul Allen, chair of the board of directors, had a lot to learn from this. Yes, Paul?
That's correct. I'm really excited to see this this movie on Saturday, yeah.
And what about you, Larry? How does Frank Kameny's name ring in the gay rights movement in this country?
Well, Frank Kameny had a presence locally and was known locally to activists in the community back when he was doing his campaigns and was actually interviewed on a early lesbian and gay radio program called Green Thursday, which happened in Rochester, New York. So he had a presence even here in Rochester and was known within the much smaller community of activists at that time.
Hmm. Michael, what do you think?
I had the pleasure of meeting Frank because I hosted him during my early years here at Image Out. We actually showed a film about his story. Gay Pioneers is the name of the documentary. It's a short documentary, so people can also look that up if they want to know more about him. And Josh was right. You know, he's stubborn, but but nice.
Well, stubborn, and thank goodness for our country and our society that he was. Because he is right. He changed society. Society did not change him, and we are all the better for it. You can see the film, The Lavender Scare. Michael, do you have the date and time there?
Yeah, it screens this Saturday at 11:30, I believe, or 11:45. And that's October 7th.
This Saturday, which theater there?
It will come to DeLille.
DeLille Theater.
No. The Dryden.
The Dryden Theater.
The Dryden, yes.
The Dryden Theater, Saturday morning, 11:30. Be there to see The Lavender Scare. And Josh, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about how you chose to wrap up the film and looking ahead and some of the language that our government does and does not use and what this administration has decided to do with that. What did you want to leave your viewers with in the film?
Well, one of the remarkable things about this, I started working on this project 8 years ago, and I really saw it as an important piece of history that needed to be told. But I really couldn't have imagined how relevant the message of the film would seem today. There are two main messages, and one is in terms of the LGBTQ community. The discrimination of the 1950s was in many ways, a direct backlash over a prior period where homosexuality was much more accepted by society. And I think one of the messages we really have to be vigilant, and we've made lots of progress over the past however many years, but I think we have to make sure we protect those victories because the fight for social justice does not necessarily move in a straight line. There can be, for every couple of steps forward, there can be a step backwards. And I think our community has to know our history and be aware of that. And for society, for broader society, this was an example of something that's been repeated time after time in our country, that a specific minority group has been demonized for political purposes. It happened during World War I with German Americans. It happened during the Great Depression when Mexican Americans were deported because it was believed they were responsible for the Depression. Certainly, Japanese Americans who were interned during World War II. And I think, we're at another time in our country where, minority groups are being targeted. And I think it's an important message that You know, when we look at how that has happened in the past, history hasn't treated those events kindly. And I think that's an important message for all of us at this particular moment in history.
Yeah, listeners, every time you've heard people like Scott Fearing from the Gay Alliance say that, you know, just because marriage equality has come to the United States doesn't mean that the movement or the effort or the concerns stop. And so we've heard from some listeners, I don't want to characterize political background, but they'll say, you know, didn't you get what you want? And one of the most surprising parts of this film, The Lavender Scare, was that juxtaposition of what was happening in the 1950s to, oh, by the way, 25 years earlier, especially in places like Washington, it was pretty comfortable for gay people. And it was viewed as normalizing and having progress. And then all of a sudden you had the 50s happen. And so take for granted that progress, and you do that at your own peril. And I think Josh's film is a good reminder for that. You can see it Saturday morning at the Dryden. And Josh Howard, the producer and director of The Lavender Scare, again, congratulations on the film, and thank you for bringing it to Rochester, and thank you for taking the time for this program today, Josh.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
It's a great piece of work, and one of many of the films that are coming here to the Image Out Film Festival, which is from October 5th through the 15th, so kicks off on Thursday. And before we have a chance in our second half hour to talk to Chris Erickson, who is a director of a different film that's coming to the festival, let me ask our guests to kind of tell us a little bit more about what they're looking forward to in terms of sort of this broad range of films here. You know, Mike, and I'll start with you here, because how many films total coming to the festival?
About 6 to 7 films.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to add to what you said earlier. Part of my inspiration in putting together the program this year is the renewed activism in the LGBT community, and that's a response to the negative stance on many high-ranking officials in the current administration. So we have The Lavender Scare, and Larry was talking earlier about the defunding of gay and lesbian artists, and that's also covered in another documentary, The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin. And people probably know about that because it was about the time when the miniseries version of his books were pulled out of PBS because of Jesse Helms, the protest around that. And then you were talking about what was happening in Britain at the time, the criminalization of homosexuality. So we have another film that will have its East Coast premiere at Image Out. It's called Against the Law, which will also play at the Dryden on our second Saturday, talking about that, where even famous people were brought to court for being homosexual and charged with sodomy. And then our narrative centerpiece is Beats Per Minute, which is France's official entry to the Best Foreign Language Oscar this year. And it traces the roots of ACT UP in Paris. So it's not just a movement here in the U.S., but worldwide, the activism at the time. And this was going back to the 80s during the AIDS crisis. So it's an epic film, and I'd like people to see that, to understand more what the LGBTQ people and our allies were doing to get to where we are now, and we should never forget.
Okay. Larry?
For me, what's always most important and enjoyable about the festival, it isn't even the films, it's the quality of the community interaction that happens during the festival, which is an incredible experience. The way that we all come together in this really wonderful and supportive environment to educate ourselves, be challenged, support each other, and celebrate our achievements and learn about our sometimes devastating history. So to me, it's the warmth and engagement of all of the people who are there, the volunteers who work on it, and knowing that it's been very important to so many people in their own personal lives. So that's as someone who knew it 25 years ago, that's sort of what always touches me the most.
Hmm. Paul?
Yeah, I want to echo those sentiments. I've only seen two of the movies that we're going to be screening, so I'm very excited to see the movies. There's some uplifting messages in some of them, as well as the kind of the challenging history stuff. But really, this question of like, why do we even need a film festival in 2017 when you can be on your couch and watch movies? And to echo Larry's point, it's around community coming together as a group of people sharing an experience. And the second thing is curation. I think Michael and his team put together really some of the best cinema in the world and bring it to Rochester. And so this listing that they put together every year, it represents a quality that you don't know what to look at and what to find when you just open up Netflix and, okay, well, here's a gay movie, but you don't know that that's like really the best one you should be spending your time on. And I think film festivals like Image Out, our mission is around community and it's around curation. So that's kind of what we still bring to the table 25 years later.
25th anniversary for the Image Out Film Festival. And to Paul's point, you know, even if you could find some of the films, you can't find all of them on Netflix anyway. This is a chance to see some things that you cannot see. As Michael said earlier, there's some premieres coming. After our only break of the hour, we're going to talk to Chris Erickson, the director of Speak Your Truth, which is this a world premiere? I think this is
a world premiere. Yes.
Premiere. And had a chance to see the film. We've got some clips. We're going to talk to Chris about what Speak Your Truth is all about. The Image Out Film Festival is online, imageout.org. You can buy tickets there. It kicks off on Thursday at the Little Theater and the Dryden Theater and runs through October 15th. And we continue our discussion next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. We certainly hear a lot about millennials or younger adults who don't want to own cars anymore. They want multimodal transportation, walkable neighborhoods and cities. But are millennials really buying fewer cars? Well, we're going to sit down with a young woman who has been car-free for more than 2.5 years. She's going to talk about her experiences up and down. That's Wednesday. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Larry Shampo is the founder of the Image Out Film Festival that is celebrating 25 years in Rochester as it kicks off on Thursday. Paul Allen's chair of the board of directors for Image Out, and Michael Gamilla, programming director for the Image Out Film Festival. And now we're joined by Chris Erickson, who is the director of Speak Your Truth. It's a film that gets its world premiere at the Image Out Film Festival. Chris, thanks for taking the time for the program. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Michael, when's the world premiere for this film?
This will be on Sunday the 8th and at 3 o'clock at the Little Theater.
The Little Theater, 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon for the world premiere. And Chris, the film's called Speak Your Truth. We've got some clips. Before we get to the clips, why don't you give me the overview of why you wanted to put this film together? I mean, in some ways it's your story, but it's not just your story. So tell me about that.
Oh, sure. It is my personal story. It's essentially about women who come out later in life, come out of their marriages, kind of unravel their family. And I interviewed 9 other women, and they are very generous in their storytelling, and I think they're dynamic and engaging, and I'm just super excited to be part of Image Out and to have my film make its world premiere there. It's beyond my imagination. I'm very excited.
What was the tipping point for you to decide this needs to be a film? This is the kind of story that is is experienced by many people, and it's the kind of story that you wanted the wider public to understand better.
Well, I think obviously you can tell your story in many different ways, and for me, when I was struggling in the journey of coming out, I sought out many different resources, primarily books, which allowed me to gain insight into other women's experience with this journey. And I felt like there was kind of a gap there. There was a hole, there was something lacking that only a visual could give someone. So I really created it so that it could be a resource for women who still struggle with this.
There are a number of women. How many women total in the film?
9 women are the primary focus of the film, and then I have some other people who kind of flesh out their stories, so to speak.
Yeah, and so there are similar threads, but there are differences. And it's interesting as they describe the process of coming to more fully and completely understand their own sexuality, their own selves, and then the decision on how to deliver that news to a husband, what the impact would be on children, what the impact would be on friends, community, other family. Could you hold certain relationships together and could you not? Let's listen to one of the clips, and this is Chris. This is, and Rob, this is our longer clip here. This is Chris talking about her husband. You know, and she, like I think many of the women in the film, were very clear that they didn't want to hurt anybody. It was a matter of understanding better who you are. So this is the director of the film, Chris Erickson, talking in the film Speak Your Truth.
The one thing that I knew that I really didn't want to have happen was like to like betray him in a way.
Mm-hmm. Like betray him meaning like have like, an affair?
Yeah, have an affair, like even kiss somebody else. Like I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. She was grappling with that, and as her friend, I was grappling with that for her. You know, I made a bunch of suggestions. I was like, you know, maybe you just keep it to yourself and maybe go away for a weekend and test it out before you, you know, confirm that this is what you want to do, because she was never with a woman. And yet she knew that that was what she needed to do, to be right. with. It was, in fact, a woman, even without the experience. So I was like, maybe before you, you know, tell your husband, perhaps you should go away for a weekend. He doesn't need to know. I'll be your wing woman. We'll go away. Nobody needs to know what's going on. She didn't take me up on that offer, though.
It became more and more painful over time. Lots of crying, daily crying at certain things that I saw. Just like trying to plug in more to lesbian things like the L word and watching lesbian movies when I could sneak and watch something like that. And realizing more and more, wow, that is kind of what I'm feeling right now, that this is legit and I need to really figure this out because it's definitely not going away at this point.
So there's a clip of Chris talking very openly about that process of making sure she fully understood it and confronting that. So why don't you tell our audience a little bit more, Chris, about that process then of kind of what happened to you and with your family. As I mentioned, many women in the film and had different experiences with this. How did it go for you?
Sure. It was, as I stated in the film, it was a very painful process. You know, you find yourself very isolated. I certainly didn't want to hurt anyone. And it wasn't only about the person I was married to. It was also about my three children, my parents, my brother, and all the extended family that it would impact. And it... You get to a certain point where your own pain overrides the possible hurt that you might do to other people, because I couldn't be the best mom I could be. I couldn't be just the best family member I could be, because I was just in so much pain with it. So eventually it just gets to the point where it's like, all right, I can't do anything else but come out and take care of this.
And I want to listen to another clip we have of a different woman in the film named Holly. And this, of the many moments that kind of stood out to me in this film, this was probably the most surprising and difficult to hear about. And that's because as Holly is coming out, she had maybe in her own mind the advantage of at least saying, well, I've got a gay brother. So, you know, this is going to be received at least. I have an opening for understanding that maybe other women in the situation don't have. Let's listen to her description of that.
First, who do you tell next? I was sort of bursting at the seams. And I called my brother, who is gay, to which he said, every family gets one gay credit. I already used ours. Mom and Dad shouldn't have to deal with this in their golden years. I was speechless. Because I thought he was going to say, you know what, big sister, I'm there for you. And he wasn't. And he was angry.
I just want to say, I watched Paul Allen's face. You reacted as I did. Can you tell me what you were thinking when you heard that?
I mean, my jaw dropped at that, right? Because, yeah.
Just can't even believe. No. But, you know, human beings are complex. And Chris, do you agree? Is that one of the most surprising moments of the film, you think, Chris?
Yeah, that was pretty surprising. It's interesting, too, people's concept of their level of support, right? So, you know, for the individual, I mean, certainly this is very clear cut in Holly's case that was just horrible. But there are plenty of women who probably see family members that could be more supportive and weren't. And yet, I'm sure if you interviewed those family members, they'd say, "Oh, they were very supportive, and you know, they're just happy to be there for the individual." But in the moment, it's it's not so clear cut. It really isn't. It's very difficult. So,
Michael, I know you've had a chance. You had a chance to see this film, yes?
Yes, of course.
I mean, how did that moment hit you?
There were many highlights in the films for me because I'm not very familiar with especially women coming out later in life, mm-hmm. and the different effects on the community, and you know, especially the church, and it's very complex and it's a difficult process for many. And I also add that for our screening this Sunday, Chris is actually going to be in town and attending, so people can talk more about the film with her.
Okay, Paul,
just the point that you know, Michael said that we're maybe not as familiar with these stories, but when we talked at our last board meeting that this movie would be our world premiere, half the women around the table said that this was literally their story. So I think it's got a lot of relevance to people. And, you know, this double standard perhaps between men and women coming out. And I'm really excited to see this movie and having Chris here to explore this. And really, I think a lot of women are going to be able to relate to this.
3 p.m. Sunday at the Little Theater to see the film, the world premiere, and to hear from the director herself, Chris. And before I go back to Chris, Paul, just to follow up kind of briefly here, do you think there is a double standard in men and women coming out?
I mean, it's complicated. But we know in society that there's so many things, gays and lesbians. Lesbians are often like made invisible, and I think maybe this reaction of the brother is like, no, you're taking my spotlight. Like, it's no, you can't do this.
And Larry, you want to go ahead?
I have a sibling who also came out after she'd been married for many years. And it isn't always this typical story that is told here. She's my hero now. And I view her challenges as many ways much more difficult than the ones that I had to go through and much more complicated. In many ways, my story, as difficult as it was, and is an easier path to take. So these are courageous women who have stepped forward to become the people that they are, frequently on behalf of their families and in consideration of their families. She's my hero.
You say your sister's your hero, but did you feel that way even at the time?
I did at that time, yeah. I will say that what I did think was, wait a second, this was my story. How could this be your experience, too? I was a little bit blindsided by it, but we're very close. And I was surprised. I was definitely surprised at the time. But.
Okay. Michael, is there a double standard, you think?
In a way, but also I think the gays are more vocal about their coming out. If you go to YouTube posting about coming out stories, the males, I should say, are more open about it and talking about it. And I don't know, maybe like Paul, we tend to just ignore the lesbians and the female story narratives out there, or maybe they're not just talking about it, or maybe we just shrug it off because we think it's easy. And that's why documentary is important, because it's good to see the process that a lot of women go through too.
The question you raise about double standards is an important one, though, because Paul and I are gay white males, and we do face advantages that many other LGBT people in our community do not face. And a lot of the challenges we have right now are related to those who are poor, or people of color, or transgender, who do not have sort of the advantages that we have going into this situation. As white guys, we're already in a sort of powerful situation. Sometimes we can step in and out of that more easily than a lot of people can.
All right, well, let me ask the director, Chris Erickson, do you think there's a double standard?
I don't think there's a double standard. I think that there is maybe a little bit of a difference with what men go through versus what women go through. And I think there is some growing research that says that, I mean, not every time, but that women tend to come to their sexuality later in life, that they're more sexually fluid. So therefore, they might find themselves in a similar situation of having a husband, having kids, and then having to deal with the reality of being gay, Whereas for men, possibly, you know, they're able to come at it at a younger age and therefore not establish themselves in the traditional, quote-unquote, traditional family. So therefore, it might be slightly easier for them. That's my thought on that. So.
Chris, as the director of Speak Your Truth, I don't know if you chose to exclude the former husbands and families for the most part, if that was their choice. Tell me about that decision-making process. And then, if you could, tell me just a little bit about, you know, to the extent that you know, how those relationships are healing and evolving as families continue to be families, just in different constructions.
Sure. I definitely made the choice not to include the ex-husbands and to keep the, you know, the extended family's story limited. I certainly, for me, I wouldn't want my ex-husband to be a part of the story. And I felt like the women had gone through so much and had considered so many other people but themselves that when they're actually telling their story, to not have it clouded by these other voices and these other influences, because that's already happened to them, so I didn't want to do it to them again.
Mm-hmm.
I did get some pushback with some of the people that were helping me with the film, but I felt that it was very, very important that the women feel very safe and free to tell their story from their perspective. Maybe somebody else can do a movie with the ex-husbands.
No, I take the point. Do you have a way of characterizing? I mean, again, it's nine women, nine marriages that that ended in this way, and so I know based on what the subjects in the film, the women in the film, were saying, some situations were I guess a little bit more smooth than others. But is there a general way that you can characterize it, or do you think it's different case to case to case?
I think it's totally different case to case. Depends on your relationship. Depends on the maturity of the guy. Depends on how much he actually really loves you. You know, it runs the gamut. It really runs the gamut. So.
And there's also an element of the added challenge when it's a very religious family. And I was saddened to hear some of the reaction that some of the women in your film received, given, and maybe not surprised, but maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, that's definitely like the one of the underlining themes that I wanted to capture, how religion might come into play in establishing a traditional marriage and then also, you know, trying to dissolve that marriage. And certainly, like, there are two women that stand out, Vicky and Michelle. Vicky doesn't even speak to her family. Well, they don't speak to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle has this very kind of distant relationship with her parents because she can't even, they don't really acknowledge her wife, Jen. So it's very difficult. And in both situations, it's the religion that seems to be the barrier in the relationship, you know, getting better. So
Chris, before we let you go, and I'll congratulate you again on the upcoming world premiere on Sunday of Speak Your Truth, and we'll see you in Rochester for that at 3 p.m. at the Little Theater on Sunday. What do you hope that this film will do for the audiences, for the people who see it? You know, certainly for the people who have similar experiences, as Paul Allen was saying, you know, just at a board meeting, how many women say that's my experience, that's my life. But you're also going to have viewers who are seeing an entirely new experience or something very different to their lives. So kind of generally speaking, what are you hoping your audience can take from this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I hope that women who are going through this just gain some insight and feel not so alone in their own journey. But overall, I hope people look at it and say, oh, there's a group of people that actually made some significant change in their life, and they're better off for having done it. And maybe it gives everyone some hope if they need to make a change in their life, or they just see things that they're not being as authentic as they can be, that maybe this will give them some hope to move forward and to make the change and to shift their life in a positive direction.
The film is Speak Your Truth. Where's it going next? What's the plan for the film?
Yeah, I don't really
it's
know.
It's a challenge, I know.
I don't really know.
It's always a fight.
Festivals, and like this is my first time, so.
Yeah, that's why I say congratulations, because I know how competitive the festival world is, and films and documentaries, and here you are with the world premiere here in Rochester. So we'll see you on Sunday, 3:00 at the Little Theater. Thank you for taking the time for the program, Chris.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm super excited about it. Thank you.
Chris Erickson, director, and one of the people that you'll see on screen in the film Speak Your Truth on Sunday. We've got a few minutes left as we get ready for the opening on Thursday of the 25th anniversary of the Image Out Festival, and our guests in studio have helped put it together. Michael Gamilla, if you could only go to one or two more. Oh, that's so unfair. I know.
You're always like asking people, choose.
You may it's like choosing among your children. I know. Yeah. But what are some of the events that you do want the community to know about, to not only see the films, but also, I think, as Paul and Larry really eloquently stated, have a chance to experience that film in that community setting, have that interaction, have that, you know, that give and take?
Yeah. Well, just to add to what Paul said earlier about streaming, and because, you know, the habit of movie watching for people has changed over the years. A lot of the films won't be coming to Netflix and won't be available anywhere else. So one of those films is this gorgeous mystical film from Mexico, which is screening at the Dryden on Saturday. It's called I Dream in Another Language, which actually won the Audience Award at Sundance. And, you know, it's from Mexico. It's a foreign language, and it's about an older generation of people who spoke a certain language that's dying. So it doesn't have the pretty pictures, but the movie itself is lush. The cinematography is wonderful. And that's why I wanted to bring that to the Dryden, because of the crispness of the screen there. And if you just like good movies, you don't have to be gay or lesbian to come to Image Out Films. These are just great movies that anyone can appreciate.
Oh, I would tell you, I mean, the films we're talking about today, I mean, particularly The Lavender Scare is a news story that should be much more commonly understood in this country and is not. And that's a documentary that it should be consumed in classrooms and should be understood by all of us, as Michael says, not just for the gay community. So a lot of great opportunities. Before our guests go, I want to piggyback on a conversation that was had on this program a week ago, last week, on Wednesday. I was out, but Megan Mack hosted a conversation about the return of Will and Grace. And one of the things that was interesting was the reaction of the panelists about whether in 2017 is it less acceptable that one of the stars is a straight person in real life playing a gay character. And I wonder how you all feel about that, and how typically now, if we're seeing films that are fictional, should it be someone who is from the community that's represented on screen, or, you know, has that changed? Michael, I'll start with you. What do you think?
I don't know if some of my actor friends would react badly to me, but I think there are times where it's better if they use actual gay people or trans people specifically.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a trans woman or a trans man character, and there are capable actors and actresses to play the role, they should be considered and not be looked over. But I also think that these people are actors, so they're meant to play roles that are not necessarily who they are. So I'm not totally opposed to straight people playing gay part, but what I'm opposed to is overlooking the LGBTQ people and mm-hmm. not even considering them for this part.
Okay. Larry, what do you think?
Well, I think there was a time when for a straight male actor to play a gay character would be considered the end of their career, and it would be very difficult for them to find work in Hollywood or in movies again. So there's progress to be made on that front, in that these straight male actors are models of empathy that the rest of the straight community can look towards in terms of trying to understand the experience of LGBT people.
Okay. Paul?
I don't really have anything to add to that. That was really eloquent. I think really it's around now trans people really need their moment here. I think that's something that Michael and the programmers have done really well. It did start as pretty much a gay and lesbian festival, but now we have the full LGBT component, and we see lots of trans people on screen now.
25 years for Image Out. It's imageout.org?
Yes.
Imageout.org for not only the festival schedule for you to make your plans from October 5th through the 15th, but also to buy tickets. You got 20 seconds. Anything you want to add before we go? Any other films you want to hit there?
Well, just to inform everyone that we're actually going to have an in-person ticket sales tonight at our office at the Village Gate. I don't know the time. I think it's 6 o'clock.
Tonight, Village Gate, in-person sales of the tickets. You can learn more about the films. And it really is a gathering. It's a festival that brings people together, brings our community together. Thank you for doing that, by the way. 25 years is remarkable, Larry. And congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And here we are in 2017, and the festival has really grown. So our thanks to the founder, Larry Shampo. Our thanks to Paul Allen, chair of the board of directors of the Image Out Film Festival, and the programming director, Michael Gamilla. Thanks to all of you for being here. Our thanks to Josh Howard and Chris Erickson, two of the directors. And again, imageout.org. Rob Braden's the engineer. Audrey Sample, the intern. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you Wednesday on member-supported public radio. Thank you.